As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Positively Trek. My name is Barry DeFord, and with me, as always, is the illustrious Dan Gunther. How you doing, Dan?
Not too bad. Excited to be here. Excited to be described as illustrious. I'll take it.
You are full of illustry. That's wrong. That's wrong.
Sure.
That's bad. That's bad syntax and everything else. I would be corrected by the topic of our conversation today. He, and we can call him he because he's biologically, or not biologically, he's anatomically correct, apparently. And we find that out in like the first season.
Very early on, second episode.
Very early on. He has left his mark on Star Trek and also bits of props and set pieces, if you look hard enough, in the DVD Blu-ray version of Star Trek The Next Generation. And sometimes you can also notice when his contacts are burning his eyeballs out. It's the often imitated and sometimes replicated Data. We are talking about the progeny of Dr. Noonien Soong, brother to Lore, father of Lal, and an amalgam of a lot of different people by the end. Data has died many times, and he has come back many times, which I would say makes him least human in that respect. But he has always been the Pinocchio of our particular sci-fi franchise, and something of a Terminator if he wanted to be, and a bit of a Superman, perhaps a Hercules. And I would say more than anything, he is always more human than human. So I think as a kind of next step off of Kirk, I was thinking, you know, yeah, we'll just throw another character in here and swirl him around and see where it went. And Dan, I went into this like philosophical black hole thinking about Data too much. And then we had to postpone the recording. And then I had to think about Data even more. And I was just doing a 3-hour car drive today where I was like, all right, finally I get to talk about Data. And I'm going through all the notes I have, and I'm like, I have too much notes. I have too much everything. This has gone beyond anything I can possibly imagine. So, dear listener, if I decide to just sort of float off into the ether talking about golems and Hercules and all of these other sort of proto-human myths and how non-humans want to be human and all this sort of stuff, I could even get into the orangutan from the Jungle Book. It's all over the place, but Data is a character near to my heart. He's someone who actually I've managed to talk to Brent Spiner really, really quick. Typically, we keep all this stuff not so much, but as we know, I'm a teacher. I've taught drama class before, and I've even had times where I've had students do skits where they have to be, you know, normal, emotional, and then they have to become Data. I call it emotion chip, and I just say chip on, chip off. I point, nice. And so the student has to be like, why are you doing this, to chip on or chip off? And they'd be like, I find that the way you are proceeding is causing a great deal of vexation. You know, like it just suddenly... suddenly have them change to just having no emotion whatsoever and see things mm-hmm. in that very sort of matter-of-fact sort of Data-esque way. Data has always kind of, for me, been the character that I like to think about. And there was a meme I saw once where he's gingerly going about his, you know, his work on the ops console on the bridge. And it just says, I could kill everybody on the bridge right now if I wanted to. And he really mm-hmm. could. He's, I often also, and here I'm already floating away on you, Dan. I often wonder, and maybe this is where I'll kind of toss the Data tennis ball in your direction. He was ahead of his time in his time, would you say?
I'd say so, yeah. Like, he's one of those characters that conceptually, I think, is really fascinating. And I mean, we'll discuss this over the course of this episode. I think the jury's out on whether that concept was ultimately realized or not. I don't know. I have some thoughts on that.
How human.
Yeah. And also when you said you'll toss the Data tennis ball my way, I will try to do a better job of catching that tennis ball than his daughter Lal did.
Yes.
In The Offspring. That was what immediately popped into my head. So.
It flies past, hand goes up. Oh, Lal was great. And I often, like, and we'll get into the actual conversation, don't worry everybody, but Lal was great in the sense that they really tried to fit so incredibly much into one single episode. I feel like Lal could have been an entire series or an entire season, right? Like, of him having all of the frustrations of raising someone. And then I think we kind of get Lal as Brent Spiner in B4 to some degree. But I have to say, I found Lal a little more endearing, personally.
Yeah, going back to what you're saying about the concept of the character, and again, I think the story of Lal really illustrates this, that episodic nature of TNG really limits, I think, the stories that they could tell about Data. Because if you think about what this character is, he's the... according to TNG, the first realization of the positronic brain, a sentient artificial android, who either before TNG starts or through the course of TNG has the rights of a living, breathing person within that society. And he's one of seven characters on this show that they have to come up with for a story weekly. So, like, there's so much story potential there. There's so much you could delve into, but, you know, you've also got to do stories for Geordi and Dr. Crusher and Deanna Troi and all these other people as well. So, like, it strikes me as this huge mine of story potential that if they wanted to, he could be a series in and of himself. And it's kind of weird that, like, oh, he's just one of seven characters that we have to, you know, create stories for, but, like... wow, he could really carry a lot on his own, I think, that whole concept.
And again, I you know, maybe I'm going to start getting us kind of down the path here, but to be a writer for Data would be a real ride, I think, for me in a lot of ways, to get to play with a character like that and to get him to experience things and do things. And you can really tell that the writers had a lot of fun fleshing him out, pun intended, and getting him... to be, you know, he's endearing. He is an endearing character. He's lovable. He's cute in some cases, in sometimes the weirdest ways, too. One of my favorite moments is in Star Trek First Contact when he gets shot up a whole bunch and then he checks to see if he's doing all right. And he does all these weird, like very precise hand gestures with his, you know, with his fingers and stuff. And he's like, oh, I'm good. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, what? That's really funny. So to start here, let's go into sort of the concept of the golem or the object made made living. And this kind of takes me typically to Pinocchio. And we both have the idea of Pinocchio. It gets brought up in Measure of a Man, which I would say is one of the best Data episodes and probably one of the best episodes of Star Trek altogether, mm-hmm. where if you haven't seen it, folks, it's the episode where Data has to go up against a fellow by the name of Maddox who wants to disassemble Data and then learn how to make him so that he can just fill every Federation ship with a ton of Datas and they can travel the galaxy and save human life. Life from having to go out and do that sort of stuff. Real quick, long story short, the fun twist is Riker has to be the person to argue that Data must be disassembled, and it's to Riker's great consternation that he has to do it, but he does a dang good job, mm-hmm. I have to say.
It's responses dictated by an elaborate software written by a man. It's hardware built by a man. And now a man will shut it off. Pinocchio is broken. Its strings have been cut.
When we think about the idea of Pinocchio, we even have our Geppetto with Noonien Soon. It's a difficult position for Data to be in because he can see humans doing things, acting in certain ways. And at the start, he doesn't even have the ability to fully understand what exactly they're feeling or why they're feeling it. Some people have found that different, you know, neurodivergent people might sometimes be able to relate very well to Data because there are certain points when they kind of get that observer effect in society. I would think a lot of people do in certain instances, especially if you're dealing with people who may have interests that you don't, but you're around a whole bunch of people. Think about a person who didn't like or didn't care for or just wasn't simply interested in Star Trek hanging out with you and mm-hmm. me, Dan. They might get a bit of an observer effect and might start looking at things that are different from what we would be talking about, or even maybe even just watching our facial expressions and being like, oh, their eyebrows go up whenever this character gets mentioned or something.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways that is a huge reason why Data resonated with a lot of Star Trek fans in particular. And I mean, we can talk about the Venn diagram of neurodivergent folks and lovers of sci-fi and Star Trek fans in particular. But I think even just Star Trek fans, like you say, in general, for a lot of time, we're kind of on the outside looking in. You know, we're on the outside of what is considered quote unquote normal for humanity because we like this niche weird stuff that a great section of society thinks of as niche and weird and kind of oddball. Data being the weird person who kind of says inappropriate things at strange times and has to be told like, okay, yeah, just stop talking now. Yeah. You know, for better or for worse, I think a lot of us can relate to that a little bit. I mean, we all grew up and had to get podcasts so that we could keep talking.
Exactly. Friendship through podcasting. But I think the difference there, and this is where he kind of gets the Pinocchio effect, is he yearns to be one of us, right? Mm-hmm. He yearns to be a part of it. And I think to some degree, maybe I'm speaking for myself, but I don't necessarily want to be a part of all of those other things. But, you know, I think there is that desire for acceptance, a desire for community, a desire for mm-hmm. togetherness. And the funny part, obviously the punchline to that whole piece is Data was human all along for the fact that he yearned to be human, right? Mm-hmm. Humans typically seem to want what they can't have. As we had mentioned before we recorded, Spock has a quote, and I'll let you give that one.
Yeah, having is not so pleasing a thing as wanting. It is not logical, but it is often true. Yeah, that's a very Spock quote and very applicable to Data's journey as well, for sure.
Yeah, like actually, Data, you were human even before you had your emotion chip, even before, you know, the very first few times we met you, you exuded an aspect of humanity that I think we all possess. And that is the thing we want that we can't necessarily have, or the thing that we are trying to understand that for some reason we can't. But I guess the attempt at trying to understand it is kind of what makes you human, right? It mm-hmm. isn't the result, it's the friends you make along the way.
Yeah. And I think bringing up Spock here is a good point to make as well, because I think with the creation of the character of Data, the temptation is like, oh, Spock was such a popular character in the original series, let's make our next generation Spock, right? And mm-hmm. but Data is never really just the next generation Spock. And I think that's the fundamental difference, is Spock existed as a commentary on humanity. Not once was it ever articulated that Spock wanted to be human. In fact, quite the opposite. He frequently mentioned the foibles of humans and said mm-hmm. how Vulcans, you know, without saying these words, Vulcans are superior because we believe in logic, and you silly humans are still, you know, eating meat and killing each other and you know, all of this stuff. Whereas Data actively wanted to become human. And
yeah,
in like I've seen, you know, kind of treatises on his character in that weakened him as a character, because Spock was so effective because we didn't worship humanity and say everyone wanted to be a part of it, but Data does. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it gives him a really interesting quality. You know, that Pinocchio character longs to be a real boy, right? Mm-hmm. But like you say, in so many ways, he's already there. And in his very desire to become human, he exemplifies his humanity. There's another little bit that I absolutely loved, and it's from a novel. A lot of stuff I take from novels, because you can delve into these subjects a little deeper. They're not canon, but yada, yada, yada. The emotion chip, right? When he got the emotion chip, it was designed to give him human emotions. But if you watch The Next Generation before he gets the chip, you can't reasonably say that he doesn't have emotions. He has emotions. As Geordi says in a particular novel, though, he may not have human emotions, but he has android emotions. If you look at Data's delight over encountering a new scientific problem, like, he doesn't grin, he doesn't laugh, he doesn't, but his eyes widen.
He perks up.
He perks up. He gets this curiosity in his voice. He thrills at the idea of unraveling a scientific puzzle that he has never encountered before. He has android emotions. He is more human than he or anyone else ever gives him credit for.
Well, I think about in Booby Trap, when he marvels at Picard's ability to get them out of the booby trap. Mm-hmm. And the game, just for anyone who hasn't seen it, they get trapped in this thing. It's a spatial booby trap by an ancient species that got trapped in it themselves. And it's basically sapping the power of the ship. And Picard is the only person to get us out by basically using a small amount of impulse and then gravity and everything else. And Data's kind of calling the shots because he can see things happening from ops.
You have used the asteroid's gravitational pull as a slingshot. Excellent.
And yeah, he's definitely fascinated. He's definitely perked up. It's got his interest and it's got his attention. And I think maybe to kind of get into why I feel he's, you know, human already, I've got a couple of pieces. So he slow builds into his humanity, right? He engages in a romantic relationship twice with Tasha Yar and then the other character whose name she's kind of
Jenna
DeSora. Right. There we are. You know, she kind of likes him because, you know, she feels like he will be not like any other man, but he is kind of like men in the sense that men have interests and thoughts and emotions and all those other things, but not in ways that she would necessarily understand. I think she wanted, you know, like just a person who would say yes to her all the time, and Data's not that kind of person. Also, the emotion chip, right? It, you know, it gets hinted at and played at, and then it gets explored through Star Trek Generations to First Contact, where he gains control of his emotions, right? From Generations, when he's swearing on the bridge and laughing and stuff like that, to the point that when they're like, hey, Data, shut it off.
I believe I am feeling anxiety. It is an intriguing sensation. A most distracting.
Data, I'm sure it's a fascinating experience, but perhaps you should deactivate your emotion chip for now.
Good idea, sir. Done.
To have control over one's emotions, I think, is one of the most important aspects of being a human being. And it's never going to really happen. No human can ever be fully in control of their emotions. It's just not the way it goes. I think that realizing limitations and then changing to better realize how to get past those limitations is also an aspect, right? Data, you know, some people rag on the idea that Data doesn't look young forever. He kind of ages. And I know they explain that away through canon and everything. But also, I think to say, you know, in a really nice way, shut up to people who say that, everything changes. And that's what being human is, too. Nothing is static. Nothing is unchanging in humanity. I'm growing gray hair now. I'm not in the same place I was. There's all these things that change a person. But that's what makes a person, is the fact that they weren't the same person yesterday. They weren't the same person a year ago. And if they are, I guess that's not necessarily a problem, but maybe they're not looking hard enough. Things change you, and they always do. So that would be another big one. He also brought life into this world, right? With Lal. Lal is an important aspect of being a human being, that we do have that ability to give life. We have that ability to do that. Not all of us do, and that doesn't mean we're less human, but having that ability, being able to explore that ability in its many facets, I think is something that's super important, and one again that gives him humanity beyond just getting to be human with like skin and like a lifespan that we would recognize. And finally, he kept a pet. I think that's also important. I don't really know if any other animal on Earth necessarily keeps other animals as pets, in terms of like to care for them merely for their amusement, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, him listening to music, him doing painting, artwork, all this sort of stuff, trying to find what interests him. You know, we can delve into any specific episode, but yeah, there's kind of my opening salvo as to me saying that actually Data was human all along.
I like that. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is a very valid and logical conclusion to what we see on screen and how he's played, right? You can talk about things like the emotion chip being kind of a shortcut to get to that place, I guess. You know, and the emotion chip's interesting. I think it's fascinating seeing him deal with these sorts of things, but I was personally more interested in the journey, I think, before the emotion chip, where you could see this progress and it wasn't, you know, a skyhook of technology bringing him up. It was his own explorations. It was his, you know, Picard lights up when Data's like, I'm going to explore humanity through Shakespeare. And Picard's like, yes, you are. Good. Yes. Perfect. And, you know, through music and through all of these things and through his interactions with the crew. And again, like, I don't think he has to be flesh and blood. He doesn't have to have human emotions to be human. Like I said, the emotion chip gave him human emotions. He had android emotions before that. Like, I think about when this is first brought up, this quote is originally from the TNG episode Legacy, where, you know, he's asked, are you fond of people? Do you like people? Do you miss them when they're gone? And they were talking about Tasha Yar at the time. This was her sister, Ishara Yar. And Data says,
as I experience certain sensory input patterns, my mental pathways become accustomed to them. The input is eventually anticipated and even missed when absent.
So in this android way, that's how he misses people. He senses the absence of those people. This is in a beautiful moment of in show continuity in Time's Arrow, which we'll talk about as well. Data has to kind of confront his own mortality, and Riker and the rest of the crew are all having trouble dealing with this because, you know, they love Data and they don't want to lose him. They think that he's going to die sometime soon. And Data confronts Riker saying, like, I've noticed that people stop talking when I come around, or they become uncomfortable. And Riker, having just been reminded of what Data said in that previous episode by Troy, says to him,
it's just that our mental pathways have become accustomed to your sensory input patterns. Hmm. I understand. I am also fond of you, Commander. And you as well, Counselor.
Beautiful stuff. And it's those moments that, like, they play around with him not, quote, having emotions in order to, you know, like you say in the emotion chip game, right? Like, chip off. He speaks this way. But underneath that, you can hear the love. You can hear the fondness. And he says, I am fond of you as well, Commander. Riker has has translated his emotions into how Data experiences things, and Data, out of consideration for his friend, phrases how he experiences things in terms that Riker would understand. How is that not a loving friend?
Well, yeah, and it's a sentient and considerate sort of thing. And I think you're right. The emotion chip winds up being something of a skyhook, whereas it seemed very much like his positronic brain was starting to wire emotions. Much like, you know, when we're young, it's the people we grow up with that kind of shape how we react to the world and to the stimuli that we face and stuff like that. And I think, you know, if you grew up in a different place under different circumstances, you're going to wind up reacting to things differently depending on how you were raised, right? I mean, it gets into that nature-nurture argument, but also I think it's environment, it's experience, it's all those sorts of things. And as his brain is building those experiences and creating, you know, haptics, as we'd call it, right? Kind of the quick way of a computer program, because it's used to doing a thing, it'll start doing that thing faster, right? That's where he's beginning to build on those pieces. And so, yeah, I mean, it would be more interesting to me, and obviously I'm not trying to poo-poo Star Trek or anything in this respect, but it would be interesting for him to say, like, well, actually, over the last, you know, during this mission that we've been on the Enterprise D, I've actually developed emotions to some degree through my experience, which is actually, you're correct, that's exactly how it winds up being.
Mm-hmm.
So the next piece I wanted to kind of get into, and you've started it really well with Riker, and I think that some of the Data Riker stories are some of my favorite, like in Disaster, when they have to go through the Jefferies tubes and everything like that, and Riker ends up carrying Data's head around for a while. Mm-hmm. It's very cute. Data is really good, I think, at making friends. He seems to be liked by everyone. And like you said, you know, he's this absolutely fascinating character in his own right. And they have to kind of write around him sometimes when he is just doing his job or something. He has unique relationships with each and every member of the main crew, right? I find he and Worf typically get on quite well. There isn't typically much problems between them, whereas I find Dr. Crusher is sometimes like, oh, Data, like, and same thing with Deanna Troi. I think Riker simply finds him amusing half the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then Geordi is a pal, like, yeah, a full-on pal and confidant, and I think it has to do both with their boyish fascination, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the funny thing is, like, you could almost see the beginning of their friendship as Geordi's fascination with technology, being an engineer, but
yeah,
they never really go down that route. Like, anytime they do need to do work on Data that would be, you know, medical, were he flesh and blood, Geordi handles it because he's an engineer. But for the most part, working one-on-one, Geordi becomes such a good friend to Data because he doesn't treat him like a piece of technology. He treats him as he would any other person. In fact, the TNG episode, The Next Phase, I'm just going to be pulling out a bunch of quotes and stuff.
Yeah.
When Data is basically eulogizing Geordi because they think that he's dead, little do they know he's with them in the shuttle and can hear everything Data is saying. Data, this is actually, he's speaking to Worf. He says,
I never knew what a friend was until I met Geordi. He spoke to me as though I were human. He treated me no differently from anyone else. He accepted me for what I am. And that I have learned is friendship.
An android learning what friendship is from a human, like, that's like Isaac Asimov stuff. Like, this is great stuff that, man, like, Data could have carried a whole, like, I would love to see an anthology series of Data living through eons of human, a bicentennial man. Is that kind of what that movie is? I think. Yeah,
I think so. I've never seen it.
I mean, either, but yeah, that feels like what I've heard that's kind of about, but yeah, I see Data, especially in these early years before we get to the movies, before we, you know, learn some of his fate and that sort of thing. Watching TNG, I always imagined Data as being this timeless person who lives eons into the future. And it's always fascinating to me that, like, these 7 years we see of his life in TNG are like a blip right near the beginning of his life, he could potentially live for millions of years after that. That idea always really fascinated me. That
it's dark.
It's a little dark, but like at the time, it's like the experiences he's having with these people that he calls friends are so formative, and they're going to inform him going forward. And I think there's even an episode, I think it is Time's Arrow, where, you know, he confronts the possibility that he may die. He does articulate that he had always imagined outliving all of his friends and then making new friends and outliving them as well. And
yeah,
it's dark to think about, but it would be fascinating to see Data as, like, I don't know, almost like a Foundation style series of novels by Isaac Asimov, where you just go through eons of history, but always there is Data. I don't know. That just always struck me as fascinating.
The constant. It's fun. I can sometimes get into a good pattern of talking like Data sometimes, but I succumb to contractions too often.
We should talk about contractions, because watching season one of TNG is hilarious when suddenly 10 episodes in, they're like, oh, he can't use contractions. And you're like, he just used contractions for the last 10 episodes. What are you talking about?
Yeah. TNG got off to a really clunky start. Let's just get that out there.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This episode of Positively Trek is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. A special thank you to our Constitution Class supporters, Jim Stoffel, Joyce Mirren, and Paul D. Kinnear. To help out with the podcast, visit patreon.com/positivelytrek, where for a small monthly donation, you can get early access to ad-free episodes, shoutouts, exclusive content, associate producer credits, and more. Thank you so much for listening, and live long and prosper.
Kind of getting back to the idea of friendship and everything and how Data is built, I think to some degree he is the sum of his parts in the fact that the TNG bridge crew of the Enterprise D was exactly what the positronic-brained android needed to actualize in so many ways and in so many facets. Like if he was, I don't know, put on the Farragut or something.
Or on the Cerritos, God forbid.
Oh my good Lord in heaven. Imagine, oh wow. I sense a whole new idea for another season is like a Data like character learning from Boimler. Oh my gosh. But that's it, is he has a father figure in Picard. He has a friend slash a brother kind of in Geordi, something of a mother figure in Crusher. He's had a couple of girlfriends, I guess you could say, or romantic partners and stuff like that. And I mean, I guess I can't necessarily turn into a family every single bridge character. But in this respect, I think he does have the right person for the right thing in each character as they exist. And as much as they have their own interactions, their own ups and downs, it is interesting to see Data sort of at the center of kind of like a nursery that, you know, you saying like he's at a very early point in his arguably millennia long lifespan. And these are the people he got to start with. Like, wow, what a really lucky roll of the dice, Data. Good job. That's mighty. I'm glad the crystalline entity came and destroyed your planet, because I think it's exactly what you needed.
What's kind of funny, and again, I love the Star Trek novels, and I think they fill in a lot of
stuff. Wait, what? You do?
Yeah, crazy. Okay. No, but they fill in a lot of stuff that, you know, kind of doesn't make sense or make connections that... Here's something that I never really thought about until I read a particular novel. When we see Data in Encounter at Farpoint at the start of TNG, there's a few things that are a little contradictory about his character. So he's a lieutenant commander. Presumably he's been in Starfleet for at least a decade at this point.
Class of 78.
Class of 78, which doesn't make sense. They had to retcon that.
Nope.
That year does not fit anything. I guess they rejiggered the calendar and then jiggered it back to something that we are familiar with or something. I don't know.
Just like warp speed.
Exactly. But so, like I said, he's been in Starfleet for at least a decade. He's a lieutenant commander. He seems so childlike and so inept at social interaction. So what's going on here? Like, he seems very early in his development, but he's been working with humans and other people for at least a decade. Now, the TNG novel, The Buried Age by Christopher L. Bennett, does this beautifully, where basically he's been working in a basement doing data entry or something like that for, you know, however many years, ranking up as appropriate as his hours fit and all this sort of stuff. But he's weird and people are uncomfortable around him. So they put him in a room and he does really good computer work and they just kind of leave him alone. Picard needs some access to some archaeological records for this thing that he's doing. And he takes notice of this officer who is extremely good at his job and takes him on a mission and decides, like, this is terrible. He's been not given any kind of opportunities. And he requests that he comes aboard the Enterprise, which is going to be his next assignment as a bridge officer. And I think that's brilliant. I think showing that, and again, non-canon, I know everyone's screaming at me, but showing the beginning of that relationship and that Picard took him under his wing as he would so many others over the years, and extending that relationship to Data, I think was really cool. And even makes their kind of close friendship in Star Trek Picard and later on make more sense as well. So
I really enjoy that, actually, and I didn't know that. But I will say that for a person like Data, as he's characterized early on, to have made it through Starfleet Academy without learning or whatever, I have to say, doesn't necessarily fall too far from my own personal experience with some people. I was in a fraternity, don't ask, but we did have one specific individual who I will not name because they have come around, but they didn't know a lot about stuff. They were really good at math, but not really good at anything else. So I got just a couple of stories. One, I had to teach this young man, how to tie a tie. And teaching him how to tie a tie was funny because as he was learning how to tie the tie, I would correct him. And when he would be halfway through, I would correct him, he would let go, and then the tie would come apart. And we continuously had to do this. Finally, we had gotten to the point where he'd learned how to tie this tie. And so I'm like, okay, well, you know, bring your own tie next time and we'll get this figured out. So he came to the event that we had where he had to wear a tie. He had this thin little leather tie. Like, it was like made out of snake skin. I'm like, where did you find this? And he's like, I went to Valley Village. And I'm like, and that's the one you picked? He's like, well, it's a tie, isn't it? And I'm like, it's the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. So then I gave him one of my ties and I'm like, well, you know how to tie it now, so off you go. And so he comes back, he's dressed up, he's in his button up, and he's got his tie around his neck. His neck.
Oh dear.
Not under his collar, above his collar, around the skin of his neck. And I'm like, what's wrong with this picture? And he's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, your tie. And he's like, my tie is on, isn't it? I'm like, is it supposed to be there? He's like, yes, it's around my neck, isn't it? And I'm like, oh my goodness. It ended up that he ended up getting a job in the United States. And that's where he was in Colorado, where weed had been legalized a long time earlier. And apparently, and I didn't see this, but apparently the common sense button hadn't been pressed, and he saw some gummies at a friend's house and just thought they were candy.
Oh, no.
So he ate the whole bag and he got hospitalized.
Yes.
So folks, know your limits, stay within it.
Yes.
They can, anyway, be discerning if it's legal where you are and you decide to try some THC. Please, please, for the love of everything that is good, try a very tiny bit. And that's if you're of age, of sound mind, have a safe way home. All of those things have to be in factor first. Don't get dumb in that respect. But anyways, I just wanted to tell some embarrassing stories about a friend I had back in the day who did actually remind me a lot of Data. Charming, very, very charming. But sometimes you just want to bang your head against a wall. I felt like Riker, very much like you kind of amuse me,
mm-hmm.
Even though you're sometimes a bit of a nuisance.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing with Riker too, which is interesting, and the reason I kind of put it in the outline was the early on concept of their relationship was going to be that Riker was kind of off put by Data and
yeah.
It was a little bit antagonistic. And it's really interesting to read a couple of the novels that came out around the time that Star Trek TNG was starting, because they were just kind of going off the series Bible. Nothing had aired yet. And, a couple of those novels, Riker is just horrible to Data and like bigoted and awful. but that was very quickly done away with, where I think in Encounter at Farpoint, he says, oh, your degree must be honorary. And Data's like, no, not at all, blah, blah, blah. And that's kind of the most holdover you get from that, where Riker's like, yeah. I'm discounting you as not being a person because you're a piece of technology. And very quickly he realizes like, oh, like Jeff Winger says to Abed in the first episode of Community, I see your value now.
Yeah. And he's a very valuable member of the Enterprise D bridge crew in so many ways, but oftentimes it does get sort of lost for the fact that he is extremely dangerous. Mm-hmm. It is like, he is like nuclear power in a lot of ways, where it's great if everything's going according to plan, but if something goes wrong, we're all doomed. And I think about when he goes to meet Lore for the first time, right? Wasn't it? Or was it to see Dr. Soong?
Yeah, Dr. Soong basically pressed a button and it...
Yeah.
Yeah, a homing beacon in Data went off and he's like, yeah. I need to do whatever I can to get to this planet. And
yeah, Picard, he like takes on Jean-Luc Picard's voice and he's like
1-7-3-4-6-7-3-2-1-4-7-6 Charlie 3-2-7-8-9-7-7-7-6-4-3-Tango-7-3-2-Victor-7-3-1-1-7-8-8-8-7-3-2-4-7-6-7-8-9-7-6-4-3-7-6 Lock.
Him taking over the ship is really scary. And I think about that a lot in the sense that like he malfunctions again during Star Trek Insurrection and he just like throws people around and like just runs amok and stuff. And that is the point, that if Data really decided, I guess you could say, being a sentient being, he could really, really destroy a lot of things. He could, I think, effectively take over the entire Federation if he really wanted to. He is sort of like Superman in that sense, where it is by dint of luck that, you know, Superman landed in Kansas and wants to be a good guy, quote unquote. I mean, there's arguments there, but this idea that I think it is Data's upbringing that makes him good, quote unquote, because if not, if he was somewhere else, he could be bad. And I know Lore is sort of the exploration of that, and I think Brent Spiner had a lot of fun playing as Lore.
Yeah,
because I don't know if there's a lot of difference between Brent Spiner and Lore, to be honest. I think that's a very close approximation, not to saying he's mean or bad or anything like that, but I think Brent Spiner, I have heard him in person, and that man has a very quick tongue, let me put it that way.
Absolutely. Yeah, he has to affect the Data voice. The Lore voice, I think, comes a little more naturally.
Yeah, exactly. So what are some of your favorite? I gave you one of my favorite moments is when Data just suddenly goes completely awry and decides to take over the ship and almost, you know, like he could have gotten everybody killed if he really wanted to. What's a quintessential Data moment for you?
That's definitely a good one. I think a quintessential Data moment for me would have to be, and I'm going to say this one, it's not the biggest moment or whatever, but I'm going to say this one just because this is a terrible, horrible episode, and this is the only redeeming thing in that episode. And I'm sorry to invoke this episode, Code of Honor. Very, very, I know. But it is the first time we see Data and Geordi kind of being pals. And
fair.
Geordi is in his quarters shaving and Data's there kind of making small talk. And then he starts to tell a joke.
A man goes to a store to buy some kidneys.
Oh, no.
He says to the shopkeeper, I'd like a pound of kidneys, please. The shopkeeper says, you mean kidneys, don't you? The man says, I said kidneys. Diddle I?
It's too old. And you didn't tell it very well.
Including the kidneys, I've told 662 jokes and you have not...
Including the kidneys. Now, see, that's funny.
It was not meant as a joke.
Clearly this has happened before. Data telling jokes. And I just love that moment because it is the beginning of that friendship, really. Like I said, like you can skip the entire rest of the episode. I think maybe future Blu-ray sets of TNG or whatever could just have that little 5-minute scene in between
The
Naked Now and whatever episode comes after Code of Honor. Yeah. Just have that there. I love that scene, and it's the one sad bit that I don't like watching Code of Honor is I don't get to see that scene, but it's the genesis of their relationship. And I just, LeVar Burton's like, oh no. He's like, wants to run out of the room because Data's starting to tell jokes again. I think that's hilarious.
Oh man. Another one that I really enjoy, and I highly recommend everybody watch it because it really just comes off as a slice of life piece that just makes me, I don't know, it's charming. It's definitely some of like the Star Trek pablum that I go back to a lot, and that's Data's day.
Absolutely.
When he's just keeping a diary, and apparently all the fences have been mended with Maddox, and so he's just sending in a bit of information. But for me, it is that moment where he and Dr. Crusher are dancing. Of course, Gates McFadden is an extremely accomplished dancer in her own right. And I think to some degree they use a stand-in for Brent Spiner, who just doesn't quite have the same feet as Gates. But later when he's dancing with her and he puts that just mannequin-like terrifying Joker smile on, and it's just like, Oh, man. No, Data's Day for me is one that I will always go back to. It's a cute story. It's him just talking about his day-to-day life, what he gets up to, and it's enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely. Under the category, I guess, of Data not being Data, I just, this is a Brent Spiner thing that I love in the episode A Fistful of Datas, where,
yeah, I was going to say that
he just randomly, and it's not even like the multiple characters he plays on the holodeck. It's the like random lapses into Southern drawl, Western speak,
yes,
that Data has when
Spot, you are disrupting my ability to work.
Vamoose, you little varmint.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Just makes me laugh every time.
Fistful of Data's is one of those ones where not only do you get to see Brent Spiner himself like exercise his acting chops, and I will say, like, I think that man is an extremely accomplished actor who like managed to get like off the stage and off sort of general sitcoms into a really great vein of acting for himself. But like, he has range. Like, Brent Spiner could do a lot more, and I think he's perfect for that fact that he would be able to be an emotionless robot, because it takes a lot to be able to be that way, I think, in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, you know, we've kind of bounced back and forth on and off with Lol, but The Offspring
absolutely
obviously comes to mind for me, where that's an episode that I like because you can tell Data is pretty unsure of himself in the sense of, you know, it takes him a while to figure out what kind of individual he wants to have overall, and getting to select all of that I think is interesting. I think they do some fun stuff. I think that's the first time we see an Andorian for forever.
Yeah.
And we don't see one again for a really long time too, which I think is amusing. I like just how you can tell he's sad she's gone. And I, as much as, you know, she's she's been put into his brain, sort of, however that works. It is something that I find fascinating because everyone gets to see him sort of try on parenthood, for lack of a better term. And it's something that I think I've kind of come back to in a lot of ways, getting to sort of be a parent now myself and everything. It's something that kind of came as abruptly to Dative as it did to me now. It hasn't left for me, and I'm happy about that. No, again, I like the idea of the offspring, the idea that it's sort of Data's experiences all in fast forward, sort of.
Yeah, that is an incredible episode. And his performance is so moving in that for a being who is supposedly emotionless, right? I mean, right. when Lal tells Data that she loves him.
I love you, Father.
I wish I could feel it with you.
I will feel it for both of us.
It's like you do love her. You do.
You do, yeah. And also, it's through other characters that you see the love that Data has and that stuff too. Like Admiral Haftel, right? When he comes out and says, you know, his hands were moving faster than, you know, and it's just like, you could tell that he was moved by the love that Data was showing for Lal.
Now I can say, sorry, just really quick. I can say though, you know, in theory, when he's dating, you can tell he's not interested, mm-hmm. right? And he is just sort of going through the motions. So I think that's interesting too, because you can see when he is on and interested, and you can also tell when he's just like, oh yeah, sure, whatever. Okay, you can tag along, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No, and that's a good point too. The ending of that episode is heartbreaking for other reasons, right?
I'll delete you, yeah. Basically.
Yeah, he's like,
Jenna, are we no longer a couple?
No, we're not.
Then I will delete the appropriate program.
Oh my god. Oi. I know we've already talked about it, but I'm going to put forward Time's Arrow parts 1 and 2, which will mm-hmm. always have a special place in my heart. But in particular, like part 1 is so much of Data dealing with this possible future mortality, which I love, but also mm-hmm. all of his experiences in 19th century San Francisco. He is yes. so good in that as well. Like yeah. trying to fit in, playing the poker game against, you know, it's Gul Dukat, but not Gul Dukat.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like just the little bits like where he's hanging out with Jack London and he delivers the anvil and Data picks it up with one hand and yeah. Jacqueline, what the, he's like, clunk, ow, I seem to have overexerted myself.
Exactly.
All of that stuff, you know, building a horseless carriage. It's like, what do you think it is? I think it's one of them horseless carriages. That is a good guess. great stuff. It's so good. I love those episodes. I think a rewatch is in order of those very soon.
I guess like my last one is his performance in First Contact. And again, mm-hmm. I already kind of gave it away where he's checking himself and everything. But even later, when you can tell he likes the feeling of skin, right? Like when the Borg Queen like blows her air onto him to give him that feeling. And you can see the goosebumps form and he's like, oh my goodness. And he gives it up, right? He fully gives it up willingly to save his friends. Yeah. Again, I think that is such a quintessential piece of Data, where he is a very loyal friend as well. And again, like any of the interactions between him and Geordi, you also get an impression of that loyalty, but you see it very much manifested there, where he literally gets what he's been after and he gives it up for the sake of his friends.
The entire bit between him and the Borg Queen in First Contact too, I love that entire scene. Like even before he gets the skin and all of that, when he is first captured by the Borg and is puffing himself up and kind of facing the Borg Queen with this kind of bravado.
Human. We used to be exactly like them. Flawed. Weak. Organic. But we evolved to include the synthetic. Now we use both to attain perfection.
Believing oneself to be perfect is
often the sign of a delusional mind.
Small words from a small being trying to attack what he doesn't understand.
Like, he kind of gets under the Borg Queen's skin a bit, and you're like, oh, he's kind of getting to her. And then she turns his emotion chip back on.
You have reactivated my emotion chip. Why?
Don't be frightened.
I'm not frightened.
He suddenly becomes, it's apparent that he was putting on a strong face, but like, he's terrified. And there's so much up and down and range in that whole scene that Brent Spiner plays. It's so good. And Alice Krieg, of course, is incredible against him. So yeah, great, great bit there.
So those are basically kind of maybe the opening pieces here to, again, I think we need to have a second discussion, especially when it comes to how Data is portrayed later, right? Moving into the movies, we'll take a break between this and our next foray into Data, but I think we start talking maybe a bit more about B4. We start talking a lot more about the Picard iterations of Data as well. I'm not quite as fond, I guess, of those iterations as much as the TNG ones. And I think it has a lot to do with that idea of necessity is the mother of invention in a lot of ways. And you have to do a lot with a little. It's the idea that like the Death Star trench scene was filmed on the back of a half ton truck. Whereas now, you know, everything is just loaded with CGI and all this other stuff. And I think that trying to cram in such a vast and broad character into little 45 minute time slots really does give him, in fact, more intrigue. And kudos to the writers for building him that way. I mean, Gene Roddenberry had this idea of a sort of Pinocchio character that would eventually become human over time, right? Like, that was always sort of the idea with Data. And I think it's a brilliant idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and hearing that, of course, Data got a lot of, or sorry, Brent Spiner got a lot of his inspiration from sort of Charlie Chaplin and the robot from Lost in Space and from, what's the other one? The Day the Earth Stood Still. I think that's interesting. And something that I would want to explore more as we sort of get into Data finally getting his humanity through death. But at the same time, I think that the writers didn't quite write him in properly because he comes back, and no human, as far as I'm aware, has ever done that yet. So that's an interesting piece to it, if I can put it that way.
Absolutely, yeah. I look forward to having that discussion about later Data as well, because like you, maybe I'm not quite so fond of some of the choices they made, but I think there's some really interesting things to talk about. And I think I don't want to say salvage, but because I don't think it's to the point where
it's not a disaster.
Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting.
It is interesting, but I think there's ways they can go with it that kind of similar to how we talked about in a previous episode about Sisko and how his later life could be relegated to myth and that sort of thing. I think the potential is there for Data as well. And I'm fascinated about that discussion. I look forward to that. I think that'll be good.
I agree. So if you find that you've got some Data moments that you appreciate, you can always bring those up on our Positively Trek Facebook chat group. You can also email us if we have gotten any of our details wrong. I know I might be rife with a few of those. In terms of the philosophical sense, where exactly do you see Data fitting in the idea of humanity? Is he fully human to us all, or is his desire to be human, you know, maybe not something that way, that human is something that just humans get and no other can necessarily be that way. You don't necessarily have to agree with us, but it would be interesting to see if there are disagreements as well in that respect. So feel free to contact us that way. And we look forward to talking to you in our next episode on something fascinating, I'm definitely sure. But in the meantime, stay positive.
Positively Trek is produced and edited by me, Dan Gunther, and co-produced by Barry DeFord on Treaty 8 territory, the home of the Beaver, Cree, Dene, and Métis people, whose histories, languages, and cultures we respect. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have lived in and cared for these lands for generations.
how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.